Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 92. And we are here tonight. Well, I'm here tonight sporting this superb COVID haircut. I have been forced yet again to shave my own head because here in lockdown Britain, you cannot get a haircut. It is illegal to get a haircut. So here I am looking rather shorn. And we are here tonight live on DLive and RadioAlbion.com. Now, we have video here on DLive. We have video on RadioAlbion.com. But we also have an audio-only stream over on RadioAlbion.com. So if you're having problems with anything to do with bandwidth or DLive buffering, which some people do, DLive's far better if you're using a wired connection on a modern computer. But if you are having problems, go over to RadioAlbion.com, and that is a great place to watch or listen to the show if you're having problems. That is, of course, ran by my good friend Sven Longshanks. The site is amazing. It's full of good information, good nationalist material. He restreams my shows every week with Dr. Patrick Slattery and Dr. David Duke. So please do go and support him. It is well worth it. Now, if you want to watch the replay of this show or the replays of other shows, you can watch replays over on BitChute. So please do go and subscribe to my BitChute channel. That would be very, very helpful. I'm nearly up to 20,000 subscribers there, and I have a new video out that came out last Friday, and it is called Lockdowns Kill More People Than COVID. And that is basically pretty self-explanatory what's it about, but I lay it all out that the lockdowns have actually killed more people than COVID in the UK. So it's a very, very important video. Please go and check that out. Now, if you want to contribute to the show, the best way to contribute to the show is through Entropy. Sometimes DLive has started blocking political content from having donations. So I don't know if they're allowing lemons tonight. They might be allowing lemons tonight. I don't know. But the best way to send a donation is through Entropy. Now, I've dropped the Entropy link in the live chat. It's also on my Gab and it is on my Telegram. You can also send Bitcoin. My Bitcoin address is on my BitChute. It is also on my YouTube. If you want to send other cryptocurrency such as Ethereum, Monero, or any other currency, please do write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. Or if you need any help, have any questions, if you have anything to say, you can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And obviously, if you want to donate by other means, you can get in touch with me there. Now, I am not on Twitter anymore. So if you want to help share this show, that would be fantastic because we have an amazing guest tonight, the wonderful Ed Dutton. So please do share this show on as many mainstream social networks as you can. That is really, really helpful. Now, what I've got to say is I can't share it on Facebook either because today, and this is the first little announcement, myself and Laura and Patriotic Alternative were all kicked off Facebook at exactly the same time. I went to my Facebook. It said, you need to log in through a PC. It sometimes just does that. Went to my PC, logged in. It told me that it was an irreversible ban. It didn't tell me why. It didn't tell me what I had done. It didn't say any posts that I'd made that had broken guidelines. It just said, you're gone. So at that point, I decided to give Laura a call and say, look, they've kicked me off Facebook. As I was calling Laura, I checked my Instagram because Instagram is owned by Facebook. They've kicked me off there as well. And the first thing she said when I said, hi, Laura, how are you doing? She goes, you won't believe what's happened to me. I've just been kicked off Facebook and Instagram. And I was like, snap, that's what I was calling about. So this is obviously a concerted effort. This isn't a coincidence. And the Instagram is really hilarious. They've kicked me off Instagram. And all I posted on Instagram were pictures of my baking and Mrs. Mark's baking. And the most gutting thing is myself and Mrs. Mark were having a bit of a baking contest between us. And we were both tied at 204 likes for our respective cakes. So now we will never know who made the best cake, which is a little bit gutting. But I am off there. And myself and Laura will be doing a special stream at the end of the month, as we always do, about PA and the updates with PA. So if you want to check that out at the end of the month, we'll talk about this in much more detail there. So as I said, if you can share this, brilliant. If you can donate through Entropy, fantastic. That's the ways to do things. And if you can really help us build the viewers for this show by sharing it on mainstream social networks, that is very, very much appreciated. Now, we have more shows coming up. On Friday, I've got my video, which will be out exclusively on BitChute. And on Sunday, we have the second of the PA Film Club, where we will be reviewing American History X. And that will be myself, Laura, Nativist Concern, and Horus. That takes place at 8 p.m. on Sunday evening. That's 8 p.m. UK time, Sunday evening. It's a Valentine's Day treat. And my haircut is absolutely perfect for that review. So without any further ado, let's get into the show. Jason, how are you, my friend? What have you been up to? And who is on the after show? And I believe the after show is rapidly heading towards a massive milestone.
Yes, we're coming up to another birthday, 3 years. It's marvelous. And we're looking forward to everybody showing up for the celebration of that birthday. We're going to have a after party in its traditional position right after this show, about 30 minutes after we end here today. We're going to have Eke Lux on, and we're going to be talking about Frankfurt School with Eke Lux, and it should be interesting. We hope everybody can make it. It is marvelous to be here with Edward Dutton again, and really sorry to hear, Mark, about what happened. I mentioned before that it is a really wretched thing when the anti-whites, it's not only the censorship, and we focus on that because of how relevant that is, but it is the hours of work that we put in that can't be reclaimed when the anti-whites censor us. And so I'm really sorry to hear that. You and Laura and everybody at Patriot Alternative that were relying on those posts and enjoying those posts and finding community by way of those posts. Really quickly, the last thing I'll say is spotlighting one of our community members who is a content producer. And her name is Yiz the Eunuch, and she is in the live chat today, and I will drop her link at some point over the course of the show, and so we can get underway. I will pass it right back to you, good brother.
And for some reason, lemons aren't working again. Lemons were working the other day. They're not working again. Oh, dear. If it's not one thing, it's another. But we do have some cheery news tonight. And the cheery news is we're joined by Edward Dutton. He's not been on the show for about the best part of the year, actually. So it's great to have him back on. He came on last time to talk about what was then his new book. We discussed that. But tonight it's more of a general chat. So first, it is a great honor to have him on. He's been a speaker at PA conferences. His content is top notch. He is very, very funny. And my favorite shows with Ed are where we just discuss random stuff, where we just get Ed's takes on life, because he is always very amusing. So it's a real morale booster to have you back tonight, Ed. You're one of the leading lights of this movement. Everyone loves you. What have you been up to, and how is lockdown treating you?
Well, fortunately, as you know, I'm a Blairian exile. I fled England when it was under the iron grip of the anti-democrat warmonger Tony Blair. So I live in northern Finland, and consequently, there is no lockdown. So all that I'm aware of is a lot of paranoid people wearing masks at supermarkets, that sort of thing. The pub's shut at 10 o'clock. So that's the only real difference that you might notice. But otherwise, life goes on here. So I dread to think what it must be like living in London or living in wherever in England. But I just haven't experienced it, and I don't intend to pay thousands and thousands of pounds in order to experience it. So I think and stay in some grotty airport hotel with lice and whatever. So I think I'm safe here for the time being. So that's what I'm going to have to do. So yeah, I'm not locked down. There is no lockdown, and I'm fascinated to know what lockdown's like, really.
Well, lockdown's pretty grim, and things are getting worse here, because rather than loosening their grip on all of this, they are actually tightening their grip on this. And I've said this before to people. Whenever anyone says to me they're going to eventually rescind these powers, the government will give up these powers, the government will have to let go of these powers, the government will just at some point have to go back on this, they will have to ease the lockdown. That is not how things work. And I'll give you a historical example. In 1799, the government brought in income tax in Britain, in the UK, as a temporary measure to fund the war effort in the Napoleonic Wars. That was a temporary measure, or people were told it was temporary measure in 1799. We still have income tax to this day. You know, more than two centuries on, that hasn't been rescinded. Once they get their hands on that power, once they've convinced the public to accept the handover of power, they never, ever give it up.
Another, a more pertinent example is DORA, the Defence of the Realm Act in World War One. And before the Defence of the Realm Act, you could get hammered and drink heavily as much as you liked, and there was absolutely no regulation of it. My grandfather told me about how his grandfather, who when he was young was a grave digger, the pub would open at 6 o'clock in the morning. And you'd go there, have a few beers, do your digging in the morning, go there in the afternoon, have some more beers, then it would shut, and then drink in the evening. And you just drink and drink and drink, and there was no problem with it. In Defence of the Realm Act, brought in the pub opening hours, which were only changed, 90 years later, when they finally started changing the pub opening hours and said you could open after 11 o'clock and whatever. It took a very long time for pubs to be open all day. That happened in, what was it, the mid-90s or something? The pubs started opening all day. And so, yeah, that's how long they kept hold of that, so they could control people and regulate their boozing. Okay, which may seem like a sort of flippant example. But yeah, you're quite right. Once they get these powers, 9/11 is another example with the appalling Patriot Act that was passed in the wake of that. They are loath to give them back because they're helpful. If you are a person in power and you want power and you like power, which is what a lot of these politicians are like, you want power, this is it, you've got power, and so of course you're gonna use it. And they should never have voted these people saying, I wrestled with my conscience and I decided, yes, that I would vote through Boris's power grab, but I did so, you know, I'm very concerned about it. Well, what a stupid comment. You should never have voted it through. You have voted it through, and you've changed the nature of Britain potentially forever by voting it through, because it will be freedom is very, very, very easy to lose and very, very easy to gain. And once it's gone, it's gone. And I think that my personal view is this is never going to go away. This is a step in the decline of civilization. That's how I see it. Well, it will go away, but I mean, it's not going to go away for a very long time. This idea that first of all, they said, what was it, 3 weeks to save the NHS? We have a three-week lockdown to save the NHS, which was insane. And we can go into why it was insane in a minute. And then it was, then we have to have another lockdown and another lockdown. And then there's a new version of COVID. And then there'll be another new version and another new version. And then something else they'll find. And there'll always be an excuse when you're obsessed, totally obsessed with individualistic values of harm avoidance and equality, but particularly in this instance, harm avoidance, where everything's about harm avoidance. Then this is just the power. And when you have a population which is very high increasingly in neuroticism, when it's a population that's increasingly governed by women, and women are much higher than men in neuroticism, in mental instability, in anxiety. And they're increasingly governing the society. When you have a increasingly, you know, it's considered a virtue to be mentally unstable and to go on about it rather than something that you wouldn't talk about. All of this leads to a society that's so obsessed with harm avoidance that, you know, you have. I mean, you know, we were last in here about when we were kids. You know, you go to playgrounds now, they have chains on the front of swings so you can't fall off. And you have to do a little sort of dance to sort of get into the swing. And if you've got a bit of a beer gut, then it's difficult getting into the swing. I heard that from a friend. Even the comics that we had when we were kids, you know, it was about people beating each other up. It was about Dennis the Menace bullying the softy. It was about whatever. And now it's about Dennis the Menace having a band with an Asian girl and a girl in a wheelchair. I mean, we've become a society that is obsessed with harm avoidance. And when they started this, it was interesting. They had the right reaction to it, I think. It was herd immunity. Now, that's difficult to achieve because, okay, this is like, let's come together as a nation. And that's much easier to do in the 40s when we're a homogenous nation of very high levels of trust than it is now when we've spent the last 70 years reducing trust and promoting individualism. But that was a good thing. Let's get herd immunity. Let's accept that some people are going to die. And that occurs with any such plague. It occurred in 1968 when there was Hong Kong flu. It occurred in 63 when there was another flu outbreak. That's what's going to happen. Get used to it. And the reaction against that was from a small minority, but a sufficiently influential minority of the population was, no, that's horrific. You're going to just let people die. The concerned, worried, neurotic reaction, the neurotic reaction of that meme where there's some fat woman on a one of those mobility scooters and she goes up to some fit young girl and says, you're not wearing a mask, you know, you're so irresponsible, you know, all this sort of, you're damaging our health. And that's why we've become so individualistic, which has been deliberately promoted and engineered and also is organic. It always happens at this stage of civilization that we can't do what we need to do to get out of this, which is take risks with people's lives and just accept that people are going to die and people are going to have to suffer pain because we're so unused to it. We're so unused to mortality salience. We've lost the coping mechanisms. We haven't been brought up in the way that we used to be, which helped us develop these coping mechanisms to deal with bad things happening to us. And so what I would foresee is a lock that this will basically never go, never. There will always be an excuse to keep people locked down, until something snaps, basically, until the evolutionary mismatch is so severe, until so many people are so disgusted and horrified that they can't give their grandmothers a send-off or that they can't go out. It's so unnatural that there's some sort of big reaction against it. That's what I would prognosticate.
I've got to agree with you. I find it... I find it insane when I go on. I'm not on Twitter anymore, but I can still view Twitter. And if you see what's trending every day, you go on and see these leftists and these liberals, and they are absolutely addicted to wrapping themselves in some form of cotton wool. They are desperate to take every precaution necessary to ensure that no harm whatsoever comes to them or anybody else. And they'll give up all of their freedoms to achieve that. I was on Twitter the other day observing people eagerly discussing the best way to wear more than one mask. And these people were having genuine discussions about how to position more than one mask, how to dispose of the masks after use, whether you put the surgical mask on first and the cloth mask over it, the best way to wear it so that it covers your nose and mouth completely. Should they consider three masks and not two masks? Just insanity. But all of this nanny state began with very, very small encroachments on people's liberties. For example, in the UK, it used to be totally legal to ride a motorcycle without a helmet. And if you decided to ride your motorcycle without a helmet and you came tumbling off and cracked your head open, you were at fault for that. And obviously, you would be in a bad way. But it was your choice because you were the person who had to deal with the consequences. And they started bringing in the nanny state and taking away people's rights, taking away people's freedom of choice. And it was all done under the mantra, we're doing this for the good of you. We're doing this to protect you. But before you know where you are, you're living a life with two masks on, in a jacket made of bubble wrap, 2 meters away from everyone, with every corner with a big, soft, fluffy ball on it so you can't take your eye out. And you have been completely infantilized by a government which isn't there to represent you, but is there to control every single facet of your life. And now we are seeing probably one of the most ludicrous new restrictions coming in, which means if you travel, and this is in a time where Boris Johnson has said it is completely unfeasible to stop migrants coming here. It's completely unfeasible to stop mass immigration. They're his words, more or less. Completely unfeasible. But British holidaymakers now, and I'm going to do a bit of a screen share here to show people what's been in the press today. Here's an article from the Daily Mail. Is this where travellers will be forced to quarantine for 10 days for £1,750? Passengers face stay in £50 a night, three-star hotel, yards from the runway, whilst down the road, migrants are housed in four-star rival. So the three-star Thistle Hotel near Heathrow Terminal T5 is one of 16 quarantine hotels chosen. Travellers could be expected to pay £1,750 to quarantine there for Monday, or £3,000 if part of a family. But down the road, more than 400 immigrants are being housed at taxpayers' expense at four-star Crowne Plaza Hotel. Well, and it goes on to say as well, two nearby immigration removal centres with space for 800 are near empty during the pandemic. So here you have a situation where Brits are being forced to basically either cancel their holiday or live in some at their expense in a three-star hotel, while all of these migrants that Boris says it's unfeasible to stop them coming here, are being housed at the taxpayers' expense in better accommodation. What do you make of this, Ed?
Well, obviously, he's disingenuous with the remark he made about migrants. Of course, it can be stopped. There just isn't the political will to stop it. Of course, you can stop it. North Korea does a pretty good job of stopping migrants from coming in. And there's absolutely no reason, if we wanted to, why we couldn't do so ourselves. So that demonstrates that. I think what's more pertinent is the causes of this, which is really, I'm normally plugging a book on here, and I am doing a book about this, but on a related subject, but I'm still writing it, which is just runaway individualism. And so the humans have two sets of instincts. You have your Jonathan Haidt, the psychologist, calls your binding instincts and your individualistic instincts. And we have to have both because we're pack animals, but we also have to ascend the hierarchy of the pack, particularly under prehistoric conditions, because women sexually select for status and whatever. And so you're more likely to pass on your genes if you're at the top of the pack. So we have these two sets of instincts, individualizing and group-oriented. The group-oriented instincts are sanctity, that certain things are holy, and versus disgust, that certain things are appalling and revolting. They are group loyalty, and they are authority and obedience to authority, and that comes into that as a desire for structure. And then there are the individualizing instincts, that is to say equality, the idea that if you're lower down in the pack, then you want everything to be equal so that you get an equal slice of the pie and are more likely to pass on your genes, and harm avoidance, because if you're an individual in the pack and you're looking out for yourself, then you want to avoid harm. So those are these five moral foundations. Now, interestingly, the people who are the people that are conservative, they tend to have all of these moral foundations, whereas the liberals, they tend to have two. They only have the individualizing foundations. That is to say, they are obsessed with equality and harm avoidance, but they are individualists. They are self, and this has been demonstrated. There's studies on this. The more they are obsessed with this, the more narcissistic they tend to be, and the more Machiavellian they tend to be, which makes sense because they're about gaining power. And so the more and how do you do that? Well, you signal those how concerned you are about those things, and ironically, signaling how concerned you are about those things makes you seem more kind. Makes you seem more pack-oriented in a way, more kind. You know, I'm in favour of everyone being equal. I'm in favour of harm avoidance. And so, therefore, you get to the top of the pack. And you get this again and again throughout history. You know, Christians come in, they're in the middle of the pack, they're middle class. What do middle class people do? They virtue signal about equality, and they virtue signal about harm avoidance and whatever. And you always get this. And then you get those that are more liberal and those that are more conservative within any given pack. And when but the problem is that things will tend to move leftwards because, of course, the conservatives have all five moral foundations. So they can empathize with the liberals, but the liberals only have two. So they can't empathize with the conservatives. And so things will always move in a more liberal direction until it creates an evolutionary mismatch where so many people are so disgusted all the time because they're surrounded by, you know, lies like a television program set in the 18th century with black people in it who are aristocrats the Beano, it's so chaotic, so there's no order and structure, you know, like Black Lives Matter protests or whatever, or there's such a sense of not being able to trust anybody that you get a right-wing reaction. And when that happens, you'll get people that are very low in these individualistic values and very high in the group values. And that will often result in another evolutionary mismatch, and eventually it will swing back the other way. And the other thing is that this normally can't happen. You can't get runaway individualism, because under previous conditions, we are in a fight. We're in a war all the time against other groups. There is group selection going on. There are enemies at the gate, like the Soviet Union or whatever, and people are aware of that. And people are aware that disunity causes problems. And so you can't have runaway individualism. You can't have chaos. But with that being gone, with that pressure being gone, you can have runaway individualism. And that's what we have now. We have runaway individualism, where we will become more and more and more and more individualistic, and more people can be inculcated with these individualistic ideas, where they can be told that, you know, you are God, basically, and you can decide what sex you are, it's all about you, and you shouldn't have any concern for anybody other than yourself. Or if you are concerned for other people, it should be for these individualistic values. And then you get this spiral whereby people signal our virtue signal, compete in an arms race to be more and more and more individualistic, more and more concerned with harm avoidance, and more concerned with equality. And it goes on and on and on. And eventually, either there will be a huge reaction against it, because so many people will be feeling disgusted and whatever, as I said, which may happen, or there'll be war, and therefore it will have to be suppressed. Or what seems to be happening is that the people that are resistant to this, are genetically resistant to this, are people that are very, very conservative and right wing, or very, very religious, or have very low IQ. And those three people, they are the ones that breed. They are the ones that pass on their genes. The people that are genetically resistant to the dysphoria and the desire to not have children and the general melee that wokeness causes. And so what's going to happen is that all of these people that have these woke ideas, or can be inculcated with those ideas, won't pass on their genes. And eventually all that will be left will be the right wing and the religious. And so I see this process as the new child mortality. Our ancestors struggled through child mortality and losing their children and whatever, and only the genetically healthy that were able to survive childhood and whatever survived, when mortality was 50%. Now child mortality since the Industrial Revolution has dropped to 1%. So child mortality is no longer the crucible of evolution. And warfare is no, because that's all gone as well. That's no longer the crucible of evolution. The new crucible of evolution is wokefare. And if you can survive wokeness, if you can survive the dysphoria and the sense of meaninglessness and the evolutionary mismatch and the desire to just give up and not have children and be materialistic that wokeness imposes, then you will be the future. And that's evident from the research I'm doing. That's what's going to happen. And so I think this obsession with this corona is just a brilliant example of this, of just runaway individualism, where the obsession with harm avoidance is so extreme that you see this complete breakdown in normal society, and this extreme evolutionary mismatch, which makes lots and lots of people unhappy, and is going. It's almost like an evolutionary event. That's how I would see it. It's an evolutionary event, and some people, probably for genetic reasons, will have the ability to survive this and to not become depressed and despondent and dysphoric, and to keep going. And most people, however, I'm afraid, won't. That's how I think we should understand it. And that's that. And as for this going on holiday abroad, I mean, that's just a sign of a decadent society, isn't it? That people have the money to be able to go on holiday.
Let me just put in there, Ed, just for a second. They've not only banned holidays abroad, but they have told people today not to book any holidays abroad or at home either. And I thought at one point, well, if they ban holidays abroad, that might cause a large boom in UK holidays. And there are lots of nice holiday locations. I mean, we've taken Sofia away for the odd weekend away, and it's very nice, and there are places to go. And it'd be good if people went to a British seaside resorts rather than taking cheap package holidays abroad. But they have told people not to book either. So they've not just decimated the tourist industry, which relies on overseas package holidays. They're also decimating the homegrown tourist industry, seaside towns and you know, short getaways here in the UK.
I have said when I was on here the first time and I was plugging my book, At Our Wit's End, Why We're Becoming Less Intelligent and What It Means for the Future. What we have done with the Industrial Revolution is we have built up a massive store of capital, which means we're hugely rich. And that means that we can become stupider as we are. I mean, if predictions are correct, we'll have an IQ of 85 by the end of the century compared to 100 now. We can become stupider. We can invent less. We can engage in fewer macro innovations and whatever. We can go backwards while our way of life gets better in a way because we've built up this store of capital. But what we're doing with these policies is we're eating into that store of capital. I mean, eventually, we will not be able to afford to have lockdown. Eventually, I foresee a situation where there are still new variants in COVID. There is still this individualistic desire for nobody to get killed and whatever. And we literally can't afford to do this, to not produce, because that's what we're doing. We're not producing. At that point, either we will have to accept that lots of people are going to die, or we will have to and break out of this spiral of poverty which we're imposing on ourselves, or we will just destroy ourselves and go backwards. Literally, things will collapse. You won't be able to work from home. I mean, if the internet can't stay up, which it might not be able to eventually, then we won't be able to work. Think of the chaos that will cause when we've taken away all of the infrastructure that used to be in place before we had the internet. People forget about this. Somebody was saying today on Twitter that, imagine doing your PhD without the internet. That would be impossible. I can't imagine doing it without this BioXR site where you can put pre-published research. And I thought, well, I did my PhD without the internet. I just checked it once a day, the emails. I didn't use the internet at all. And then people thought, how could you do that? But there was infrastructure there. People would publish, you know, like bibliographies relating to a particular thing. There was infrastructure. And that's all gone. So the infrastructure's all gone. And if the internet goes, we're in serious trouble. So imagine doing this over the phone or via sending letters back and forth. That would take ages. And you'd have to have access to a television studio. So that's how I see it. If they carry on like this, we have no money left. We're just impoverishing ourselves. We'll have to either, I suspect we will break out of it eventually, but it will be a very dramatic and unpleasant thing when we do. A lot of people will have got used to not working. A lot of people will be utterly fearful of everybody else and very upset and probably prone to suicide and goodness knows what. And that's what we're doing. We're creating an extreme evolutionary mismatch, so extreme, more extreme than anything ever. And that's what sends most people crazy. And in that sense, it's an evolutionary, it's a selection event.
Wow, that was, things are pretty bleak. Those who are going free know that the MC and individualism is suicide in a world of collectives. And that's why we choose, those of us who are going to survive these upheavals, that's why we choose to come together as a collective. Just a couple thoughts over the things that have been shared so far, and we can keep rolling right along. Mark mentioned the helmets requirement. When you have, and this is not a position that is in opposition of state-run healthcare, at least from this perspective, but when you have state-run healthcare, it is logical to then force people to wear helmets and protective gear because everybody's going to have to pay for their lifelong vegetative state when they crash on their motorcycle. If they have to have private insurance or there's competitive insurance companies and they cannot seek the public dole for their injuries that they create, their self-harm that they create, then it makes sense to the general population to say, let them do whatever they're going to do and let them suffer the consequences. In the United States, we have said prior to these laws being implemented or the legalization of the different types of drugs, now you see many different types of drugs now legalized up in the northwest of the United States, that fine, you can do your drugs as long as you don't make me pay for the outcomes of the use of all of those drugs. And of course, that's what they're going to make us do. What's happening right now at the federal level in the United States is all of these states who implement anti-white policies, more so than the other states, are of course bankrupt. And by way of the federal government and controlled of the federal government by the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats, they are forcing the rest of the states to pay for those states. So New York and places like this are now receiving an infinite number of funds from the rest of from the states that are not as anti-white as New York. Incidentally, this is what caused the war for Southern independence, in a big way, the South having to pay for everything in the United States because they were agrarian and they made a great deal of money in selling the tobacco and cotton to Europe. And the Southern states were outvoted at the federal level, so they were forced to pay for all of the roads and et cetera improvements throughout the United States, primarily in the northern part of the United States, and the South became sick of it. But unfortunately, we don't have the legal right to secede anymore in the United States, and the anti-whites are not going to allow anybody to secede. And so that brings me to my final point of what has been said so far, and that is that laws, do they ever go away? Well, in a way they do. Sometimes, literally, they don't. But in a way they do. In that we are kidding ourselves when we think that humanity can remember and implement all of these. I don't know, where are we in the United States now? Maybe millions, and if you take federal and state laws together, maybe millions of laws. I don't know, across the whole United States. Humanity simply cannot do that. What they end up doing is they have some vogue laws that come to the fore. This is another reason why they will write bills. To be made into law that are already law, and they'll just make it again. They'll make them law again because they have forgotten that the laws already exist, that they could already use the laws on the books. And sometimes these laws are resurrected, as you saw with President Trump doing this with the Something Care Act, where you can't come into the United States if you're going to immediately get on the welfare system. That was made a law back in the early 1900s. And then the anti-whites acted like Trump had just invented this out of thin air and was saying that these immigrants couldn't come in if they were immediately going to get onto the public welfare system. So in a way, laws can recede as at least their importance and therefore their implementation, which is not to say that right now we're going to see a recession of the mask rules or things of this nature. And why is that? Well, the reason why is because these things serve the anti-whites who are in government. I would submit that if something else came along that would serve the anti-whites better in their victimization of Western kind and Western civilization than the mask rules today, that they would wipe aside the mask rule in favor of whatever that might be, and then begin to subject us to those new restrictions or what have you. But it is going to come down to, certainly in the United States, it is going to come down to a dysfunctional system. There isn't any pushback because the anti-whites who call themselves Democrats have defeated the Republicans, who are anti-whites who call themselves Republicans. So there isn't going to be any substantial or significant pushback, or so it's going to have to be some breakdown. And you're already seeing that in places in the United States, and I dare say in the UK as well, as anti-white, increasingly anti-white ideas and suggestions, laws, codes, etc., are not met with some sort of resistance from healthy people. Remember, the victimization of individuals need not be white positive. Their pushback need not be white positive to undermine what the anti-whites are doing. You might see some sort of breakdown of things that anti-whites otherwise need to run, because unlike the typical parasite in an animal's body that will kill the animal because it can't think, the disease can't think to know that it doesn't want to kill the organism so that the organism will persist and therefore the parasite will persist. In society, they do see when things begin to break down, and they will endeavor to keep things going, to stay on top of that society. And so just some more thoughts to add to the conversation.
Well, I would add, though, with that when you get runaway individualism, you actually can get people acting against their interests,
yeah, because
you can get conflicting yes. Evolutionary instincts. Now, one instinct that is very strong, particularly among people who are individualists, is basically Machiavellianism, is a desire for power. And if there's nothing in place to stop people virtue signaling and outdoing each other on their virtue signaling about the importance of equality and the importance of or indeed of religious belief and how committed they are to the group. Then eventually you get something like the Gnostic movements, and Paul Gottfried has argued that multiculturalism is really a Gnostic heresy, where they argue that, well, life is the world is an evil place, and we shouldn't have children, and it's morally bad to have children because you're bringing more children into this fallen evil world that was created by the satanic demiurge. And so therefore you become more powerful in the group if you don't have children, because you're therefore more moral, and you advocate that more firmly. So your desire for power, that strong instinct for power, actually becomes maladaptive in those circumstances because you don't breed. And that's what we have with multiculturalism. We have a movement that is literally advocating not just that white people shouldn't have children. They go beyond that. You talk about everything being anti-white. It's more than anti-white, it's anti-human. They go further than that. They want to put the rights of animals above the rights of humans. there are strands within the left that are like that, that it's humanity. It's worse. Yeah, whites are worse than blacks. Fine. But humans are worse than most animals are far more pleasant and logical and reasonable than woke people. Because woke people are mutants that are mutated to want the destruction of their own species. Whereas you don't get that
baby bird last year and it lived in my downstairs toilet for a couple of weeks. I'd much rather share my home with that baby blackbird than I would a Somalian asylum seeker, for instance.
And I would much rather share my home with a Somalian asylum seeker than I would with an upper middle class, privately educated left wing person. because at least that Somali and I would see eye to eye on certain things. We would understand the importance of group, the importance of ethnicity, the importance of life, the importance of having families, the importance of normal adaptive values, whereas the woke person wouldn't. So yeah, I see you. I can completely sympathize with you on that front. You're dealing with these basically zombies. That's how I see them. They're people. It's like that's why I think zombie films are so popular these days, because what a lot of them. There was research on this that found that people who watch horror films are more able to deal with unpleasant situations in real life than people that don't, because horror films inure you against fear in dangerous situations because you're experiencing them in some way, and they kind of show you techniques how to deal with them. So horror films are a little bit like fairy tales in much the same way. What do fairy tales do? They warn kids against danger, and they're more likely to absorb that information if it's presented to them with imaginative surreal elements, and there's been research on that. And so that's why the fairy tales are therefore passed down over time, and you know, avoid dark forests, avoid strangers, that sort of thing. And so horror movies would seem to offer that kind of function. So it's inuring you against the dangerous thing, and it's showing you what to do to survive it. I was watching Train to, is it Busan or Husan the other day, this Korean horror movie, and I thought, bloody hell, if that happened in Britain, we'd be in trouble, because of course we have these electric rails, whereas everywhere else it's overhead cables. So it'd be much more dangerous because there'd be a live wire escaping from a zombie-filled train. But so the way I would see it, though, is that the zombie movies might be increasingly popular because we are aware that we now live in a society where most people are zombies, where most people are. So what do zombies do? They literally eat your brains and want to destroy their own people. That's what zombies do. And what do the woke do? The woke are eating your brains in the sense that they employ this illogical, insane ideology that makes no sense at all and is totally inconsistent, so that race is a social construct but also exists, depending on what they feel like. And also, they are destroying their own people. And there are a small band of brothers who are resistant to this in the zombie movies and manage to escape. But I think we realise that's what we are. And most people get infected. The vast majority of people either are the original zombies, or they get infected with wokeness and they dysphoria and they don't have children and they become materialistic and they don't pass on their genes. And there's a small number of people who are genetically able to not be infected, which is basically congenitally right-wing religious people, and also low IQ people. And those people will survive, but then they'll survive to the new zombie apocalypse, which will be low IQ people. But I would see us as living through a zombie apocalypse. I think it's a perfectly reasonable metaphor. A wokalypse. Yes.
I was just going to say, I definitely push back on this being anti-human, because non-white people are, whenever they're harmed, it's only collateral damage throughout the West. They are encouraged, at least in the United States, perhaps not in the UK, they are encouraged to have gigantic families. They're depicted in media with large families and very happy. They're paid the more children that they have. White people who are anti-white would never think in a million years of even suggesting that to a non-white person not to have children, not to celebrate their culture, not to celebrate their people, not to have more of their people. Our governments bring in non-white people as rapidly as they possibly can. So I see this as purely anti-white by anti-white oligarchs. And I think the evidence clearly shows that as well. It is to the harm of Western kind that this is taking place, not to the harm of
that's true. No, I think you're right. It is to the harm of Western kind. But if you look at what happens to them when they come in, these non-whites, to Western countries, then their birth rate event after one generation dramatically declines. And that is, I suspect, because they are themselves subject to the zombie apocalypse. They are themselves subject to an evolutionary mismatch. They are themselves subject to materialism and dysphoria and whatever. And so it does affect them as well.
Collateral.
And all I'm saying is that although the whites will not, will virtue signal about not having children. And you do get this, that they will virtue signal about not having children. Now you could see that's in part because they have a suicidal attitude towards their own group, which they probably do. But I also think that it does extend to having a suicidal attitude towards their own species. And they want to take us back. I mean, these Extinction Rebellion people, they want to take us back to a sort of dark age, basically. If the kind of policies which they want were instituted, there'd be a collapse of 90%. Although, to be fair, that collapse would happen anyway if we went to Darwinian conditions again now.
Well, and again, with the Extinction Rebellion people, where are they pushing that? They're not pushing that in, Namibia. They're pushing that in the UK. They're pushing that in the US. They're pushing that where white people are. And when it comes to the individualism that is plaguing us, perhaps there's a genetic factor, but certainly there is an ideology of rapid, rabid individualism. And that deteriorating the system or breaking down the system. It's true that there will be individuals, if you can imagine a business for a second, for a moment here, that there would be a business manager or an assistant, and they are all rabid individualists, and they are doing things that harm the business. The owners, however, the anti-white oligarchs, the people with the real power, the real money at the very top, they're not going to allow the restaurant to go under in a way that will undermine their power. So I don't know what that would necessarily look like if they wanted to preserve an environment, a nation, a civilization in a way that will keep them entrenched in power and in power vis-a-vis other forms of power around the world. But they won't allow civilization to crumble to the point of like Mad Max simply because their managers get the behavior out of their employees, just as we do in business. They get the behavior out of their employees that they want, or they get new employees. So they will preserve whatever civilization would need to look like for them to maintain their power vis-a-vis the other holders of power around planet Earth. So I agree that at the level of the restaurateur, the gourmand, and the waiter, and perhaps the manager, that these individuals could be rabidly individualistic, and they could harm the restaurant by doing whatever they would like to do, maybe not paying their bill, maybe going to the kitchen to get the food they want rather than wait, this sort of thing. But ultimately, if the restaurant became destructive for the power wielded by the restaurant owner, he or she would step in and correct that ship to work in a way that would nonetheless serve him or her, as I say, vis-a-vis the other holders of power. In this metaphor would be the other restaurant owner down the street.
I don't think that necessarily entirely follows, because if they are obsessed with their own individual power then they can keep going and keep going and keep going to the detriment of society. And by the time it's realized what they've done to society and it damages them, it would be too late. As a society is a complex organism, you get people that are obsessed with power, they get into positions of power, they push for more power. All they're concerned with is their own individual power. And as long as they can protect themselves from any negative consequences that might bring about, then they'll be perfectly happy to keep going and make the society worse and worse until, you're right, eventually there would be some sort of pushback. So if they were cunning enough, then they'd have to have other things. They'd have to be obsessed with power and have a high level of intelligence as well, and be interested in sort of other factors. But I'm saying that someone that was purely individualistic would presumably just keep going, to keep promoting their own individual interests at every point until they were surrounded by chaos. I mean, you see this in wars, that a country is taken over by an individualistic person and he just takes it to the destruction, like Robert Mugabe or someone like that. And this brings about his own removal because of his own obsession with his own power, his failure to take into account.
Precisely. And who's removing them? If you were the owner of the restaurant and you had a rabid individualistic manager that was harming the restaurant, you, of course, I mean, unless you are positing that the people at the very top, the people with the true power, the people who know what's really going on, unless you're positing that they are afflicted with the same sort of blinkers and that they don't really know what's going on in the world, the restaurant owner in the example here would be aware of what's really going on in the world. And if you had an employee, a manager, that was power hungry and harming the restaurant, you would eventually, as you just pointed out, eventually the individual would be removed. The people removing the individual would be those with the real power behind the scenes. Now, again, like I said, you're pointing out like the breakdown of civilization. Whatever that looks like, it would have to be something that would keep those who are truly in power. They would not allow it to break down in a way. So, for example,
how could they stop it from breaking down?
The same way they have engendered this scenario right now. They hire people who implement strategies and policies that are benefiting and increasing their power as individual power holders. And so at some point where it became detrimental, these people would be removed, as you point out, and other people would be hired, and the expectations would be projected to them about what's now going to take place and this place of business. And any deviation from that will result in your dismissal from the position. And that then would work its way down through the ranks of the business. And this,
restaurant comparison is helpful because a restaurant is quite a simple thing to run. We're talking about a complex society. But how if people are becoming, sorry?
I said it's scalable. It's just human behavior.
It's more involved. Societies do collapse. And so if your metaphor is correct, they would never do so. They would always make the correct decisions, and they would. But what if they made the wrong decisions? And what if they miscalculated?
Because it's not taking place in a laboratory. There are external pressures. Now we have in previous times, you have societies where the external pressures were far more numerous than they are today. The holders of power hold far more power today than at any point in human history. So there are fewer of these individuals left to have to compete that could, by way of external power, reduce the civilization to pieces. If anything, the external powers now are so few and so powerful that they would worm their way in, as China right now is worming its way into many of the Western countries and beginning to take control of many of its centers of power. And they would simply supplant the power holders that were there before. It wouldn't be in China's interest. If China could take over the United States, for example, by way of numerous subversive means, it would not be in China's interest to reduce the United States to crumbling ash of dystopian hell because China would be empowered by a very powerful.
I'm not saying that they want to reduce the United, any country to a crumbling ash of dystopian hell. I'm saying that they are engaged. They are engaging. There is a process occurring where something like that is going to happen, because you get a large. They are pushing a situation where so many people will be in such a strong evolutionary mismatch that they will either not breed, and the only people that breed are those who are very right-wing and very conservative. That's the data. Those are the people that disproportionately breed, which means that over a generation, you'll start to see a change in the nature of society, and you'll see this upward percolation upwards into positions of power of basically intelligent right-wing people. And it's almost inevitable that it happens just by demographics. So that's the first thing, that they can't do much about it. That there will be a change in the nature of the people and what they're prepared to tolerate and what evokes riots and what evokes problems more quickly. So that's the first difference. And so you and those people will gather others around them who will do their bidding. Secondly, the society is collapsing in trust. We know that. So it's much more difficult to control people and to indoctrinate people if society is collapsing in trust and sort of splitting apart into smaller polities. So there's not a lot that's something that they have to try to control. And thirdly, people are just getting stupider, and thus they are more inclined to make bad decisions, and to misunderstand things, and to just balls up, and so therefore they become more difficult to control. That's why China's so dangerous once it has this kind of technology, because they have an average IQ of 107. They're very, very intelligent, and therefore they can. It's more complicated than that in countries like Britain or America. And also the country's more diverse. So I'm saying that it's the idea that these are these super clever, evil, genius Dr. Robotnik types that can control us all, and will always be able to do so unless some sort of Sonic the Hedgehog is sent in. It doesn't fit with the data, and it doesn't fit with previous experience. What you're getting is something very similar to what you had at the end of Rome, which is the rise of these highly individualistic and powerful people who take charge and are highly individualistic, but they eventually, you start to get riots, and they can't keep food on, they can't keep the lights on. I mean, they can't keep civilization going, and that's when you start to get a reaction against them.
You're talking about both natural and artificial selection, if I could take it out of biology for a moment. And when you have this, you're talking about these societies where you mentioned Rome there. They didn't have, of course, the ability to know what every single citizen was thinking and to be able to make decisions based on those thoughts, based on those likes, based on those dislikes. I would submit that if the anti-white oligarchs who run the Federal Reserve, who print the money in the United States, who print the money in the UK, if they had become themselves poisoned or diseased with these crazy ideas, which I don't think they have. I don't think they're fooled by the ideas that all of us throughout the rest of the ranks of our civilization in the West have been fooled by and diseased by. If they have, then healthier external powers who now, when Rome, they didn't have the ability to do this, but if they did, this would have changed the outcome of Rome's collapse. They will come in and they will simply supplant with the least amount of disruption possible. And even if the population ends up, as you say, even if you're 100% correct there, and you might be, that you end up with healthier people reproducing, they can still, from the position of authority, select for those who are going to be submissive, who are going to work for them, who are going to carry their will. And this is really how these institutions were dominated across the West, this idea that it percolated up.
Oh, I see what you mean. Sorry. Okay, I see. We're talking about something slightly different. I see what you mean. Yeah. So I would certainly concur that you're with these kinds of people. We're talking about Vicar of Bray types. We're talking about Marquess of Winchester types. These are people that they just want power. They have no principles at all. And so if the wind changes, you're going to get, and you did get this, you're going to get people that would be active for the Nazi Party in East Germany, and then just as active for the communist GDR. And those people will change their minds and may even genuinely believe it, because through effortful control, it kind of makes sense to force yourself to believe the current ideology, and thus will always try to stay in positions of power. I agree with you. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of these people, these oligarchs, I think that's exactly what they're like. So if we were living in a society that was very influenced by group oriented values, like in Victorian times, they would be virtue signaling about that. And they were, about how patriotic they were, about the importance of the nation, about all that. That's exactly what the Henry Ford, someone like that. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they'd be going on and on about it. And then now that it's changed, and if you want power and money, you have to pretend to signal the new ideology. Well, that's what you do. Yeah, I agree with you on that. Those people aren't going to go away. And they're going to be cunning and clever and try and keep hold of resources. I agree with you. I entirely concur.
So are we saying that there is going to be a collapse or there isn't going to be a collapse?
I think there'll be a collapse, but you're going to get certain very devious, Machiavellian, individualistic people that will always manage to find ways to survive. And protect themselves from the as much as they can from it, and to the extent that they think that it's going to harm them, they will do all they can to try to stop it. I think that's what Noel Gilt is saying. They will do all they can to try and stop it to the extent that it will harm them, but they won't try and bring it about. But they're not idiots. But there is a degree to which the things they can't do about it.
I did quite a long stream about this, what I thought would be the fallout from COVID. And I do think those that are doing this know what they're doing to a certain degree. But you can know what you're doing and things can still get out of control. You talked about horror films, and there are often horror films or films which are sort of could be described as horror or thrillers, where bad people do bad things and they know they're doing bad things and they have evil schemes, but those evil schemes then take on a life of their own and get too big for those bad people, and those bad people get caught up in it. I mean, take what's happening in London. You're seeing quite advanced societal collapse in parts of London now, and the societal collapse is getting too great for the police to actually deal with it. And the police are obviously being hamstrung as well, because every young black man has been told that if you see another young black man being arrested, you can step in because it's police brutality and the police should not be arresting black men. So you've got a major problem with policing this collapse. And the wealthy will have enclaves. The wealthy will have places which are protected by private security. They'll have gated areas. It'll become more and more like South Africa, where the rich white liberals call for liberalism and togetherness, but live in nice gated communities, which are anything but liberal or together. They're little enclaves for the elite who push this on the rest of us. But there does come a tipping point where if things go too far down the road of chaos, if things go too far down the road of collapse, you can no longer protect those little enclaves, and people do have to come out of those eventually and face what normal people have to face. You can't forever live in those. And if it gets to the point where the Tesco, well, they won't be shopping at Tesco's, the Waitrose deliveries aren't being delivered anymore, if it gets to the point where people are hijacking food deliveries, and like you say, the internet goes down, and are siphoning gas and electric from the grid, and we're having power outages because there's too many people. Eventually, it will affect those people. And I've said this many times before. Wait a second, Ed. I've said this before about the people doing this. The people doing this seem to be so gripped by short-term greed and the desire to crash the ship of state into the rocks, to plunder it, that they're doing this so rapidly with very little foresight to the long term. And there's, whether it's a fairy tale or a parable or a fable, call it what you will, but there is a story that I was taught when I was young, and it was a tale of a farm with a farmer and a farmer's wife, and they had a goose that laid golden eggs. And for quick profit and to get all the golden eggs, the farmer and his wife cut the goose's neck and cut it open to get the golden eggs. It was laying them on a golden egg every day. But they said, well, why wait for a golden egg a day when we can cut the goose open and get all the eggs now? They cut the goose open. There was no eggs inside it. It never laid another egg because it was dead. And their short-termism ruined their long-term stability and wealth. And I think a lot of the people involved in this wrecking of the West are so driven by hatred for white people and so driven by greed that I don't think they're actually looking to how do we manage this in 50 years, 100 years. It's just now, now, now. And that's all they want. All they want is immediate wealth and to see this immediate swing towards liberalism, because they're motivated by two things. Greed and the desire for money, and also hatred for our people. But they are so short-sighted that in the achievement of those two goals, I'm not sure whether they will be able to manage this in the long run. And you've seen this in, take for example, in France. A certain tribe of people have been absolutely desperate to multiculturalize France. And a few years ago, this tribe were all complaining that Muslims were attacking them and they weren't able to go out of their houses, and areas that used to be safe for them were no longer safe for them. Well, they campaigned for multiculturalism. They're the ones saying, no, 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 the borders must be open, because they were so desperate for the money they were making from open borders and because they were desperate to multiculturalize France. But the multiculturalism ended up biting them too. And I believe that these people don't have some grand master plan for the next 1,000 years. I believe they're short-termist. And the reason they keep getting into trouble, the reason they've always got into trouble throughout history, the reason they've been thrown out of so many countries, is because they can never manage it. They always look to short-term profit or short-term results over long-term stability. And, you know, I think there's a figure of something like 109. And that, you know, that could rise due to their own policies of multiculturalism in Western nations.
I think you're that's a very good summary of it. I mean, I think you've got to think about what most people are like. Most people don't think of in the long term or think about the good of their group like we might do. They are much more the kind of people that would watch this show are high, I think, in binding values, in group oriented values, and most people are probably lower in those values and are higher in individualistic values. And if you're high in individualistic values, what you care about is your own power and your own wealth and whatever, and you care much less about the good of the group and you care about you. And so you don't care about your children and what their lives are going to be like, or your grandchildren. And in that sense, you are. It's you now. That's what matters. And so that's in that sense, they are short-termist. And you can think about this in terms of like the floating voter. So you'll get people who in the late 90s would be all virtue signaling and feel good about themselves and whatever and say, oh, I'm going to vote New Labour, New Britain, New Labour, new, fresh, dynamic, young Britain. And then there would be a portion of those people that when the chaos that New Labour instantiated with multiculturalism and war and economic collapse and all of this stuff, when it actually hit them, then they'd change their mind and they'd decide to vote Conservative. And they would decide their interests were different, and they would decide to vote Conservative, and they would see no problem in that. They wouldn't even admit to themselves that they made a stupid mistake, because that would be to admit failure and to admit bad things. They would just think differently. They would experience a cognitive draw, and they would change their minds. And that's what a lot of people are like. And so you can let it become absolutely chaotic. And when that chaos finally hits you, then you will persuade yourself that, oh, you were right wing all along and we need to do something about it. A good example of that is Britain in the 70s. So it was dominated by the Labour Party and socialism. By the late 70s, Britain is the poor, sick man of Europe. And you would have had all these people that would have voted Labour all their lives and would have, oh, socialism's great and trade unions and all this. And then when it brings about total chaos and really damages their lives, then this will persuade them to change their minds and to throw in their lot with people that will propose to do something about it and bring about less equality and less harm avoidance and more structure and order and you know, sanctity and whatever, which is what they did. And then when that seems a bit unfair, when things seem a bit unfair, then and they feel it's unfair, and you know, they know, and it's in their interests to virtue signal and blah, blah, blah. Oh, then they'll vote New Labour. The same people. And that's what most people are like. They don't care about truth. They don't care about logic. They care about getting on with other people. They care about people liking them. They care about their comfort now and a few decades hence. You know, they'll pay for a pension, that sort of thing. And that's it. And they certainly don't think in the long term. And so you can completely understand why these kinds of situations arise. I mean, I was saying in the late 90s, I was saying this internet thing, you know, it's only going to lead to trouble, and we shouldn't use it. But no, the people that want to be modern and different and change things. We just had our landing renovated at great expense because my wife likes change. And I was perfectly happy with it. It had been renovated in the 70s by the person that used to live here, and I was fine with it. Leave it alone. But no, let's change it. And that's what these people are like. They change because they like change, and then change is bad. And that's what most people are like. They're idiots, most people. And so that's what you're dealing with. And I think that's where I would agree with Mark, that this isn't it's there's degrees to which things are planned. There are some people that are manipulators, and they think, like people like George Soros, and they think, I would like a world like this. Or they do, they think indicating I would like a world like this and working to in a sort of way to achieve a world like this will benefit me by making me seem nice, and this will get me more money. I think that's what they think. And they convince themselves, because you're more persuasive if you really believe it, they convince themselves, therefore, that they really believe it. So when you distinguished earlier, Mark, between greed and hatred for our own people, I think with a lot of people, those things shouldn't be distinguished. You're greedy, and you can get money and status and power by signalling your loathing for European man. So that's what you do. And indeed, you convince yourself you really believe it, because it's more persuasive if you really believe it. And so therefore, the two things are inseparable. And if there was a situation where those, and there have been such situations, where those very same people could get money by doing the opposite, then they would do so. They would do so. And one day they will do so. And so, yeah, I think it's runaway individualism. And what this can have is maladaptive consequences for individuals and maladaptive consequences for groups. And we're seeing this now, because eventually, if this carries on like this, we'll just run out of money. There isn't an infinite store of money to be able to sustain people in the lifestyles which they have become accustomed. And relative deprivation, which is what they're imposing with this lockdown, it's relative deprivation. You're used to going on holiday once a year, and you're used to going on holiday to somewhere hot. But by stopping this, it's relative deprivation. And that really upsets people. People get really angry about relative deprivation. That's what revolutions start from. So I just can't see how this can, I can't see how we can break out of it on the one hand because of this obsession with harm avoidance. But on the other hand, I can't see how it can be sustained. And so what I would suspect is that eventually there'll be something will break.
Nothing sustained forever. Nothing sustained forever.
It can't be.
Look, when you drive, and we're going to have to go to the question straight after, so I'm just going to end this with this point. When you drive something into the ground and you keep really not reaching for the skies, but trying to race to the bottom of the barrel, eventually it grinds to a halt. And one thing I'll say about the government, and one thing I'll say about the civil service and all stratas of what we would call the establishment as a collective, they are now all so filled with anti-white doctrine that they constantly fill their ranks with people who are not the best people for the job. They are selected for their race and for saying the right thing in terms of ideology. So you get a situation like South Africa. Now, South Africa had a wonderful water supply. It's ruined. They can't irrigate their crops. There's no drinking water. If you look at the situation in South Africa now, when it comes to water, when it comes to drainage, when it comes to sewerage, it's dire, to say the very least. It's absolutely dire. But that's because the people put in charge of running the water department were selected because they were black and because they were saying the right things politically. But when you select somebody for running the water department, that's not what you select for. That is not what you select for. And I think the government is now filling its ranks with people who aren't capable. And we've said this about the police. I often tell the story about going into Asda and seeing these two little dumpy Oompa Loompa women. And if I'd have decided at that point that I was going to take something off the shelf in Asda and walk out of it, they couldn't have stopped me. They couldn't have stopped anyone. They would have struggled to stop an adolescent boy. And they're not doing the job. They weren't fit to do the job. They weren't fit to be police officers, but they were chosen because they said the right thing and they ticked a diversity box. And ultimately, the system will collapse under its own weight if it keeps selecting for the wrong things.
But it did, because that's what happened on January the 6th with the invasion of the Capitol. If you look at it, there's four police officers guarding these steps. And one of those is some weak 5'2" woman. And they pushed against them and they managed. And she, of course, fell over. And that was it. They were through. So it was diversity. It was the tick the box. Oh, yeah, she's a woman and policeman. We can't have a height requirement. That allowed that invasion to take place in the first place. And it was, whereas if they'd had a policeman of about 6 foot who was a man and was muscular, it would never have happened. They probably wouldn't have pushed him over. So it shows you that it's that kind of, it's when society starts to become stupider, then it starts to become and decadent. It becomes more obsessed with equality and harm avoidance, and therefore it becomes more obsessed with the new ideology, and therefore you select people that are crap for the job, and therefore it just makes things worse in this spiral. So to go back to No White Guilt's restaurant metaphor, what would be happening would be the restaurant would literally through kind of mass delusion be selecting people that were crap at cooking, exactly. because they were black.
They'd have a head chef who'd never cooked before because he walked in, said the right thing, and was the right ethnicity to fit that job to say that they hit their diversity quota. But that is happening. It happens in the fire brigade. It happens in the police. It happens at the BBC. It happens in every strata of establishment life. And if it continues...
Exactly. So why is there no funny comedy anymore? Why is there no funny comedy?
Because people... There's no funny comedy because ultimately, left-wing people aren't particularly funny. And look, before we're going to wrap this section up, but British humour is generally based on taking the mickey out of people. It's based, it's quite dark, it's based on banter, it's based on often being quite rude. And if you look at British comedy like Blackadder, it's satirical, it's quite rude. There's lots of what would be seen as personal jibes in there. But when you see left-wing comedy can't be funny by the British standard, because you can't make personal jibes. You can't be rude about the state of a person. You can't make jokes about personal issues because it's rude. And there was something else I really wanted to bring up tonight. I don't know whether we've got time now to bring it up, but it's a very important point, because, and it leads on from this, they're now saying the Royal College of Midwives, or midwives all over Britain, are being told not to call breastfeeding anymore, because transgenders don't have a breast, so it's got to be called chest feeding. And they can't talk about pregnant women anymore. They've got to talk about pregnant people. And this sounds like it's a different issue that we're going to raise here. But the fact is, Ed, it builds into what we're saying. This is, again, they are pushing this madness, this ideology. Now, if you're a midwife, a genuine midwife who cares about women, who cares about pregnancy, who cares about breastfeeding, who cares about all of these things, you're actually not only they legislating for the wrong people to take the job, they're actually putting in this madness, this brain melting insanity, which puts off the right people from accepting the job. So it's almost like it has a push and pull factor. It pulls in the wrong people, but it actually pushes out the right people. Because if you've been a midwife for the last 10, 15 years or 20 years, you spent your whole life as a midwife, this is probably the kind of thing that wants to make you take early retirement. And who are you being replaced by? Somebody who says the right thing, somebody who's a transgender themselves, somebody who's ultimately not fit for the job. I'll bring this up because I've got it here. We'll have to just do this quite quickly. But I'll do a share screen again. There's only one sex that can give birth. Fury at hospital's order to midwives to say chest feeding so transgender people are not offended, as new maternity bill refers to pregnant people instead of women. And you go down here, and these are the kind of people this is to appease. I'm going to show you one of them. Look. Freddie McConnell took to Instagram. Freddie McConnell took to Instagram to reveal he has suffered a miscarriage. Well, he didn't suffer a miscarriage. It's either a she or it's a man. If it's a man, it can't give birth. If it's a she LARPing as a man, it can give birth. Then she suffered a miscarriage. But all of this puts off genuine, a decent people from taking on these roles.
This person was transitioning to be a man and then reversed the transition so she could have a baby and then sued the government for making her be the mother on the birth certificate of the child. And by the way, her real name is Jessica, not Freddie. And absolutely. And by the way, what do you say about not offending them? Of course they get offended. They get offended by anything. Transsexuality is essentially an expression of borderline personality disorder. And people that have borderline personality disorder get very easily offended. So that's why they're so aggressive and they're so unreasonable and they're so easily offended and they're so prickly. They have basically narcissistic rage. They'll try and destroy you. I've suffered this from a paper.
Well, they love being offended. They love it. They search for things to be offended for. They love it. You could say something. You could say something that wouldn't seem to anybody that would be offended. So I could say tonight, my daughter was naughty at tea time. She threw her beef and noodles on the floor and laughed. And they would recoil in horror and say, how dare you? Have you asked her if she's your daughter? Has she confirmed her gender yet? And something that is absolutely so innocuous and normal, they would draw such deep offense from. And it's
also
almost
like a beat.
And that I gave her beef. Usually she loves beef. Tonight I said, are you going to try a morsel? And she said morsel. And then she ate one and the rest went on the floor. And then she demanded chocolate.
Did you ask her if she'd converted to Hinduism before you gave her that beef? Kinds of things you have to take into consideration, Mark.
I didn't.
You really should.
But the thing is, that's a good point. You're making a good joke, but you're making a good point too. I didn't even notice that the vegan transgender leftist would not only have been offended that I hadn't asked my daughter what gender she was, but they'd have also been offended that I served her meat. You know, all of these
things correlate with being mentally ill. Being transsexual correlates with being mentally ill. Being a vegan correlates with being mentally ill. Being vegetarian weekly correlates with being mentally ill. They all correlate with being mentally ill, because you've got these mutants that have reached a tipping point over the last 10 years, and now they're able to impose themselves on a society that's obsessed with individualism, and that's not causing offence. Oh, it's all.
Well, look, we're going to have to do some questions, Ed, but this has been a fascinating chat so far. Let's get through some of these questions. Bailiff Basher, thank you very much for the donation. It doesn't tell me how much you donated, but thank you. He said, hi, Mark, keep up the good work. Donald Trump lead impeachment manager representative Jamie Raskin is an absolute reptile. The hyperbole of his self-hating of this self-hating Jay is off the charts. All true Americans should be ashamed. He is from their country. Well, thank you for that. David Slater gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, keep up the good work, Mark. 14. Well, thank you very much. We intend to. David gave £10. And I'm going to read this super chat because I always say I'm going to read the super chat. But the super chat is the following. Dat ass, 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 dat ass. She bad, 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 she bad. Gucci bag, Gucci bag, Gucci bag. Fendi bag, Prada bag, Louis bag. Gucci bag, Gucci bag, Birkin bag. She in the bag, she drip, she swag, never mad, she glad. Louis. I don't even know what that means.
They'll make him professor of poetry at Oxford University.
I don't know what that means, but it was worth £10.
Benjamin Zephaniah to do it.
That's obviously going to get clipped. My rap career is obviously going to now take off. And yeah, so there you have it. Everyone seems to find that very funny. I don't know what that's from. It is rather amusing. I can take a joke. Obviously, somebody's having a bit of a laugh at my expense, but there you go. That is. You see, that is British humour. That's British humour. That kind of thing is British humour.
As you said earlier, British humour is based.
It is. JP gave $10 and said, "Mark and Jason, would you do a film review on Joker? If I may, would you please have Devin Stack on the panel? He may even give a black-pilled perspective on it, no pun intended. Perhaps there could be a friendly debate. Love the show. Keep doing God's work." Well, we do have a film club, JP, and we are welcome to having guests. We have got American History X this Sunday, but I think we're going to do a poll for the next film club. The next film club one I wanted to do was Once Were Warriors. I think that's a really important film, but I'd be happy to review Joker. Haven't seen it and would love to get Devin Stack's opinion. Thank you very much. Max Anderson gave £5. Thank you very much. He said, "Lionheart England on Telegram had his GoFundMe cancelled today for a patriotic walk with the dragon flag. Hope he can get support in other ways. He made me aware of the white dragon flag in existence." Well, thank you, Max Anderson. We will support him any way we can on that. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you, Serena. And she said, "Love to the panel." Well, love to you. Thank you. And thank you for your support. Candy Coloured Clown gave £14. Thank you very much. He said, "Mark, have you heard the film review podcast, The Pods Button? The host, Borsi, would be a great guest, in my opinion. Dr. Ed, what's the alt-right scene like in Finland?" Ed, that's the question for you.
Oh, I don't know, alt-right, but there's a thing here. Well, Mark spoke at it the year before last, actually, called Awakening. So that's really the centre of that sort of malarkey. In Finland, it's a thing called Awakening, and there's a few people involved in the political party Perussuomalaiset, which is the second biggest party in Finland, that are involved in that, and then various other people. So it's not bad. It's not insignificant. That's the way I put it. I mean, I've had a situation
before. I was invited to speak this year. Myself and Laura couldn't go, but as soon as travel restrictions ease, we'd love to come again. So thank you.
I couldn't go, and I live here. So they had to cancel it. And yeah, also you've got to remember that Finland being Finland, they're very polite and reasonable and united even now. So at the 2019 Awakening, eventually they found out about where it was happening. And so there was an Antifa protest, and it was composed of two blokes, a fat bird and a dog. and then two policemen to guard them. And I went up to this bird, and I said, "Is he friendly, your dog?" And she said, "If you are Nazi, then not." And I said, "Well, let's just check then." And then the dog started licking me and snogging me in the mouth, and there was nothing she could do about it. And so that was nothing she could do. I said, "Who's a good boy? Who's a boy? Who's a good boy?" And then the policemen were like laughing, and she was like,
"The dog raised its right paw." She was in tears.
The dog raised its right paw. Yeah, she was not happy about me snogging a dog. But the thing is, the dog was left. The dog was based. I mean, the dog believed in normal, you know, passing on its genes or whatever. But unfortunately, it had this this typical, you know, lesbianistious looking owner. But yeah, so it was all right, really. I mean, not much kickback. So yeah, it's okay. I'm actually speaking at the Estonian. There's an Estonian thing like that this month, which I'm speaking at via Zoom. They've looked across to Western Europe and they've seen what's happening and they're just like, no.
Do you know what really annoys me? I've just got to say this very quickly because we've got to move on to the next chat. It's actually for you. But don't you hate it when like leftists or liberals buy dogs and feed them vegan dog food?
What the hell is that? I mean, that's like feeding a human vegan food. And that's just like it's just bad for you. That's just an evolution.
Chris, he gave £5. Thank you very much, Chris. And he said, "This is for you, Edward. What does Edward Dutton think of the vaccine, and will he be having it?"
No, I won't. I don't think so. Because what's the point? Because
exactly, that's my thoughts too.
I'm not like deeply unhealthy. So you know. No, what's the point? No. Anyway, if they make a law that in order to go to England, I have to have it, then I suppose I will have to have it. But if they bring in that kind of stuff, but otherwise, if it's hard to travel without it, I'll have it for practical reasons. But I don't, I wouldn't otherwise, no.
Yiz the Unit gave $3, thank you very much, and said, "I think David Dutton's brilliant words would have greater power if he would say anti-whiteism instead of wokeness. What does the good doctor..."
Who the hell is David Dutton?
Sorry?
Who's David Dutton?
Sorry, he said Dr. Dutton.
Oh, right, yeah.
Did I misread that?
Yeah, you said David.
Oh, sorry. What does the good doctor think about using anti-whiteism instead?
Well, I think that wokeism is a more encompassing term. So, yeah, you've got people that are anti-white, but you've also got to think about the transsexual movement and the pro-paedophilia movement and all the other sick garbage that is promoted by these people to undermine Western civilization and to create dysphoria and to just destroy us. So it's a broader thing. I think that when I say anti-whiteism, as you call it, is just a subsection of a broader interrelated trellis of maladaptive stuff. And so I'd rather use the word woke.
We in Going Free use anti-whiteism to encompass everything that inflicts any harm on Western kind. And so therefore it's a superset, and I think that's what she's speaking to, a superset that then contains the subsets of all things that you just mentioned that could harm Western kind.
Well, thank you very much. We've got to fly through these super chats. Blunderbuss gave $25. Thank you for the generous donation. He said, "Have my Trudeau bucks, Mark." Well, thank you very much, my friend. Candy Coloured Clown gave £14 again. Thank you very much. And he said, "Do you think Brexit could harm Brits in the long run? I.e., if when we're a minority and we want to engage in white flight to the EU to escape the anti-white African and or Muslim majority, we won't be able to. Happy Valentine's to my brothers and sisters. Lots of love to you all." Do you think Brexit could be harmful to us, Ed?
Well, I mean, it could potentially, in the sense that I was able to come here to Finland and because we were members of the European Union. So in that sense, possibly. But what I would suspect is that by the time people will be fleeing in this way, the European Union will probably have broken down anyway. Because that's what tends to happen at this stage. You get smaller and smaller polities. Britain will have come apart and Europe will come apart and because trust levels will go down and there's no Soviet Union enemy at the gate to keep us together. And so I don't think it's going to be a big problem. By the way, I wouldn't know. And I don't know if it's to do with COVID, but they're going on about Valentine's Day this year, in my experience, more than they normally do. In Finland, anyway, lots and lots of commercials for it, lots and lots of stuff about Valentine's Day, lots of articles plugging it. Even No White Guilt has some kind of Valentine's Day balloon in the background, like a girl. Is it to do with COVID? Is it people want to cheer up or what? Is Valentine's Day, they're going on and on about it this year? Really, is it to make money because the economy's tanked or what? What's Valentine's? Big thing this year, isn't it, Valentine's Day? That's what I think, anyway.
I don't know. I'm not making much of it.
I don't know about where you live, if there's a difference, but here we definitely celebrate Valentine's Day. And every Valentine's Day, every holiday, I decorate the office. But if it's different there, then I'm not sure what's going on.
Well, we've got another question here. Well, this in one's Finland, Junta Momonari gave $5 and said, Sir Dutton, are you aware that TFR is collapsing for all races in the West? Everyone is below replacement, and TFR is collapsing around the world as well, even for Africa, although at a much slower pace. Do you know what is causing this?
What's TFR?
I don't know. Does anyone in the chat know what TFR is?
Total fertility rate, probably. What's total fertility rate? Let's assume it's that. What I would suspect is causing it is once you get to a certain level of luxury, then you stop becoming religious, so you stop having monumentalist values, and so you stop bothering having children. You just become materialistic. One, and two, it's dysphoria. We're not meant to live in cities. We're not meant to live with people that are strangers. We're not meant to live in multi-ethnic areas, which is what almost all cities are everywhere. We're not meant to. It's not normal, and so it creates a dysphoria. And also then we have the rise of reliable contraception with that as well, and so all of the and feminism as well comes in, which means women delay their fertility and whatever, and so therefore for all of these things come together, and you get below replacement fertility. And I should stress that you always get it at this stage. It's not just now. You got it at the decline of Rome, the decline of Greece, even the decline of Baghdad, exactly the same. And Sir John Glubb Glubb Pasha looked at that in his book on this. It's absolutely fact. Even feminism, you got the decline of Baghdad, women becoming lawyers and things like this. So it's always the same. I look at this in my new book, which is Feminism and the Fall of the Rest, which should be out soon. That's what's causing it. I think it's a dysphoria that comes about through living in an extreme evolutionary mismatch, like living in a zoo. Interestingly, if we were able to fight this disease, if we didn't have lockdown, that would be more like evolutionary conditions. That would be more like what we're adapted to. That would be, like an evolutionary struggle, like a fight, a real fight. And that might actually make people happier, ironically, I think.
We've got a question here for Jason. And this is from Junta Momonari also. He gave $10 and said, Jason, I suggest looking at the TFR numbers for America. Everyone is below replacement. Blacks would be lower than whites if it wasn't for immigration. The Asians in Australia and New Zealand are lower than whites. The only way to push down whites' total percentage of the population is through immigration. I'm not sure about these statistics simply because in the UK, I believe the Islamic population is growing. I mean, and not just because of immigration. They have massive families. When Mrs. Mark gave birth to Sophia, I remember being on that ward, and you weren't meant to bring other children onto the ward with newborns, but I saw a Muslim family come in, and they brought all the children, and he was bringing with him five children to meet his, it's either four, I can't remember now whether it's four children to meet his fifth or five children to meet his sixth. But either way, there was a lot of kids trailing behind that man who was coming to see his missus with another, who'd just given birth. And I don't know.
Where was he from? Where were they from?
From West Yorkshire.
No. You know what I mean? I understand, yes. But where of course, yes, ethnically West Yorkshire. But because the average of a Somali families is five.
No, it was they were from the Indian subcontinent.
Okay, average for them is three.
Just my little joke. But Yiz the Eunuch gave another $3. Thank you very much, and said, I think Macron is a good example of the rudderless power mongers Dr. Dutton spoke about. Now it's evident nationalism is unavoidable in his populace. He has changed his tone. We have power in unity. Well, thank you very much. For Camaraderie gave $3. Thank you very much. He said, evening, Mark, Jason and Ed. Jason, that's a tasty looking balloon, mate. Keep up the work, gentlemen. Yeah, Jason, you should eat that balloon. Jez gave $10. Thank you, my friend. He said, which does Ed think would pose a greater threat, spiteful mutants or zombies?
Well, I think that the original zombies are spiteful mutants, and then they have, if we want to follow this metaphor, and then they have infected people that are merely mutant-y or whatever, or individualistic-y with the mind virus. So it's the same thing. I don't think we can distinguish between the spiteful mutant and the zombie. But I suppose on another level, you could argue the zombie, because the spiteful mutant is like Andrea Dworkin or Kate Millett or someone like that. They're spiteful even to themselves. They don't breathe. They're just revolting people that influence other people to behave in a maladaptive way. Whereas the people that are the zombies that will be inculcated like this, some of them do breed and could be quite attractive and could therefore kind of inveigle their way into your life. And then you'd be sort of pulled under by their borderline personality disorder and other more subtle things that are wrong with them. The spiteful mutants aren't subtle. You just see them, stay away. Blue hair, stay away. But you might get somebody relatively normal looking and normal in behavior, and you'll get chatting to them, and then they'll upset your evening, as happened to me at a pub recently in Oulu. So, and she looked quite normal. Okay, she had short hair. But so in a way they're more dangerous in a social situation, because then they'll just sort of spread negative vibes and make you feel sad, and so in a sense they're worse.
Right, we've got $15 from Flying Dutchman. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, "Greetings from Grodno, never. I can't pronounce that word, Navaradat, to be exact. Sorry, I'm going to post that in the chat." I can't pronounce the word. Tonight has been a bad night for rap and pronunciation. So thank you for the super chats there, my friend. Rory Herbert gave £3. Thank you very much. He said, "I met my wife whilst wearing a cravat. Does Professor Edward Dutton find it hard to find a supply of well-made cravats in Finland?"
Yes.
Yes.
There was one shop in Oulu that sold them. It's called Stockman, and it shut down. And so, but it's okay, because it's the kind of thing that you could order online or whatever, or get sent from England without having to try it on. What's more difficult is getting hold of a good smoking jacket, because that I'd like to try on, and they can before I buy it, and they're like expensive. So that's a problem here. But yeah, it's difficult to get hold of nice clothes. Generally, you have to buy them secondhand. You have someone that was born in the 20s or 30s and has died, and that's how I get hold of quite a lot of my stuff. So yeah, cravat supplies. No, I didn't meet my future wife while wearing a cravat. I have to say that was something I toyed with around about that time, but I don't think I was wearing a cravat at exactly the time. No, but good. Yeah. Cravat nationalism is a significant subsection these days of British nationalism. It's very much the way forward.
Right, we've got two more super chats. Cunts gave $5. Thank you very much. He said, "Does Edward think that George Soros is motivated by the fact he wants people to think he is a good person? I read an interview with his son Alexander, who said his dad was motivated to become a philanthropist after living through the Big H as a teen." Well, look, I'm going to throw out my answer. Soros isn't motivated by the fact he wants people to think he's a good person. He's motivated by the fact that he wants to destroy the West to ensure that white people never rise again in the way they did in the 1930s. What do you think, Ed?
Yes, that may. I don't know enough about him, but I think that may. Well, he's motivated by that and greed. But yes, that is perfectly conceivably the case. And it's the things that he's established in Hungary, which of course is where he's originally from, have all been like gender studies departments and whatever. All they are is just anti-science, anti-academic nonsense that spread maladaptive ideas and question structures that have developed over centuries to sustain successful policies. That's what they do. They just undermine things. And it's excellent that Mr. Orban has removed his ridiculous Central European University from Budapest. He's a very bad man. It's good that the Hungarian government realized that and indeed put up posters in public places stressing it's the case. He's a very, very bad man.
Okay, we've got one last super chat from Herewood Silvatisi. He gave $5. Thank you very much. And he said, Mark, please address the rumor that you put Gorilla Glue in your hair and hence had to shave it. On a serious note, we censored ones will have to move to federated software ultimately. Sorry about the Instagram. Try Pixel Feed. See you there. I will try Pixel Feed. And just in case anyone didn't get the joke, I'm going to do a quick share screen here. Louisiana mum of five who sets her hair with Gorilla Glue arrives in LA to seek help from plastic surgeon after month-long struggle to remove the adhesive as she hits back at claims she did it on purpose to gain money and fame. So this is the woman, and she set her hair with Gorilla Glue, and basically she's stuck with her hair like that because she set it with Gorilla Glue. There you go. That's the woman. High IQ individual.
Yeah, exactly. And five children.
And
heritability of IQ 0.8. And by the way, dysgenics among black women is very high, higher than among white women. Because if you're a high IQ black woman, there's very few high IQ. Normally, you're what, a cleverer man and or a higher status man. And there's very few such men, and you get penalized by white men. White men find black women unattractive, and so you can't. It's difficult to marry out of your race, and so the cleverer ones just don't have kids, and so you get people like that with an IQ of goodness knows what, 80. By the way, what is putting glue in your hair is obviously stupid, but what is Gorilla Glue as distinct from normal glue?
Is like a very tough glue. It's a very tough glue. It's like
super glue.
It's like super glue, but I think there's a pun to be had somewhere in this. And there's one last story I picked out for today. Polish model Cassia Lenhart killed herself on her son's 6th birthday a week after splitting from ex-Man City star Jerome Boateng. As friend says, I hope the truth comes out. Now, this woman here, very attractive Polish girl, ended up with this fella here. That's her son. I can't really tell from there whether he is... potentially be mixed race, you know.
He's got a very funny face. I wonder if his father's Andy McNab. Andy McNab has a face like that. I see. So she killed herself because what?
Because she was with this man. She was with this man who apparently has allegedly had been quite mean to women in the past. And I think there's a message here. You know. Do you think there's any message to be learnt from this, Ed?
Treat them mean, drive them to suicide.
That's certainly a message. My message is quite simply, bring your daughter up well and instill her with good moral fibre so that when she chooses a partner, she chooses more wisely than that woman did. And... I think there's something else that can be learned here, but maybe the chat could help me out with what could be learned from this. I don't know. Maybe the chat could. We do have another super chat, though. Again, it's from Hereward Silvatacy. He gave another £5. Thank you very much. He said, Mark Collett, please set up donation alerts like Randbot. Did Sophia help cut your hair? Did you know that modern clippers have different length settings? I offered to send you a set of perfectly good wild clippers last time you butchered it. Yes, anyone that wants to send me a pair of clippers can do so. You can write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you'd like to see me have a better haircut. No, Sophia did not help me with the cutting of the hair, but the first time I shaved it all off, she did look rather scared, and then I made a scary face, and she did look a bit upset and cried, but then she figured out it actually felt quite funny to run her hand over it, and she kept saying head, 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 and slapping my head. So that was quite amusing in itself. Arab Social Nationalist gave £10. Thank you very much, my friend. This is a question for Ed, and he said, Ed, how would you assess the damage wrought by the Austrian school and such people as Ayn Rand in relation to individualism on the Republican Party and Tory right? What an excellent question. Thank you for that, Arab Social Nationalist.
I think that it's not, how would I assess it? I think the Republican Party in America, I think, wasted a lot of time under George W. Bush going on about Ayn Rand. when what they should have been thinking about was the good of the founding people of America. And that's what would be the sensible thing to do. And they should have understood that America was founded by not just white people, let's forget this, by Anglo-Saxons, by English people. It was 90% white in 1900 or something, and of those, 85% were Anglo-Saxon. So it was, and they were once the interest group, and so they should have thought about that rather than about rugged individualism, which ultimately pushes you towards selfishness and lack of community, and means that, remember, it's the group that's low in positive and negative ethnocentrism that gets overtaken by the group that's high in it. And these Americans, you know, they didn't manage to civilize the wilderness and win against Geronimo and all these other great patriotic people who stood their ground and fought valiantly but lost by being Ayn Randian individualists. They did so by being groups of cooperative people. So it's a stupid idea. By the way, she was a mental. She was absolutely crazy, this Ayn Rand. Perhaps we could even call her a spiteful mutant. My colleague Michael Woodley, indeed, in his book, argued she was one. So yeah, it's just extreme individualism. With the libertarianism, there was a study on this, and it looked at the nature of libertarians, and they're quite a distinct subcaste where freedom is more important than anything else. It is damaging. It was a damaging.
They also live in a clown world, though, don't they? Because what they're suggesting is so insane and so bizarre, it doesn't even fit the model of humanity. And if you look at Ayn Rand, she was actually part of that particular Middle Eastern tribe, and she dripped this poison into the ears of conservatives and Republicans, who then, as you say, basically put freedom on a pedestal above the good of the group. And that is pushed upon these white Western intellectuals, but it isn't, and people who would probably fall on our side of the fence if it wasn't dripped in their ear. But it's never ever pushed upon other racial groups. It's a real poison. I cannot stand libertarians. I can't stand libertarianism. They're basically arguing with a libertarian is like arguing with a giant maladjusted baby who has no concept of reality or how systems work in the real world. And all their answers are just so, so childish. And they constantly fall back on silly rhetoric, such as the free market will sort it out if it was genuinely free. And it's just tiresome rubbish.
They're also ahistorical. So when I've spoken to them, they'll talk when there's been debates where people say, we need to limit fossil fuels, whatever. And I'm not necessarily agreeing with that, but their counter argument is, oh, well, we will find something to replace it and it will be brilliant. And I'm like, no, we won't. We have no understanding of what's happening, do you? You have no understanding of the dynamics of who's breeding and who isn't, sort of the genetics of intelligence. And you think you think people are kind of a blank slate, and if you just give them freedom, then they can achieve things. Rubbish. That's not consistent with the evidence. People are not a blank slate at all. I'm not even sure free will even exists. I don't see how there's room for it biologically. And even if there is, you're gonna get a society that is destroyed by the enemies at the gate if you balkanize it and atomize it in the way that you're gonna do if you don't cooperate with anybody. If you look at those computer models, the people that the societies that cooperate with nobody, so you've got these computer models where the society that cooperates with outsiders and not internally, or the society that shuns outsiders and cooperates internally. That's the one that wins. And one of the ones that's destroyed very quickly is the people that just don't cooperate with anybody. Those groups are destroyed, are completely destroyed, even more so than humanitarians.
But they believe in nonsense such as, the same as the people who believe that property rights would sort everything out and stuff. It just doesn't work like that. I know that sounds like a very simplified answer, but it doesn't. You need to come together as a powerful collective who all has the same, who has in-group preference and wants to look after your group. And different groups then have different expressions of an ideal society. And in a white Western society, you have liberty held up highly. But liberty dies when you open your borders and let people in who don't understand liberty. And it's amazing because every single libertarian who talks about, you know, all this Ayn Rand nonsense would probably, if transported back to Europe in the 1930s under certain so-called dictators, would have probably flourished in that society. They would actually flourish in a society which was more Eurocentric and more in-group preference than we have now. But they think the opposite of that because they're basically, I mean, not to be mean, but they're mental pygmies, aren't they, libertarians?
Yeah. Well, to a certain extent. I mean, it is good in a society to have a balance of people. And so the people that are these genius types, what they tend to be is very highly intelligent individualists. They're not very cooperative. They only care about themselves. They want their own freedom to do their own experiments or whatever. That's it. That's what they care about. So in a sense, they are libertarians. And it's good to have a minority of people that are like that. That can benefit a society. And one of the things that's good about European society is we do have a minority of people like that, whereas you have very few people like that in, let's say, Japan or China. And so therefore, you have less per capita genius. So that's true. But you can't have too many of them. Or, as I say, you just come apart. And you certainly can't, in a situation of group selection, in a situation of war, you can't have many people like that. And so, yeah, it's a silly little phase that a lot of people go through. But no, Ayn Rand was not a good influence. As you say, poisonous.
And also, divine. I've got to throw this out. When libertarians talk about free markets and how free markets would always right everything, the first thing you learn in economics, when you are looking at different models of the market, is that the free market is a model, and there has never been anything such as a free market, and there'll never be a free market. And the reason there'll never be a free market is because in a free market, or under the free market model, people always make rational decisions based on price, and they have access to all the information all of the time. So if there's two shops on the high street and one of them is selling cans of Coke for £1 and the other selling a can of Coke for 65p, under the free market model, every single person who wants a can of Coke goes to the shop selling it for 65p. But in the real world, it doesn't work like that, because there isn't 100% freedom of information. There isn't 100% freedom of knowledge amongst the populace. So when you're walking down the high street and you want to dash in a shop for a can of Coke, you don't know which one is selling it at which price. You just go into which shop that's convenient for you, buy a can and walk out. And you might be 35p down and you might be 35p up. And people also make rational decisions. But if people made rational decisions, they would not buy Apple products. A rational decision is not based on brand loyalty. Brand loyalties exist because rationality does not conquer everything. And the whole free market model that libertarians build their utopia upon is an abstract model. That's when I did economics at A level, you learned that in the first week.
But you did a degree in economics, didn't you?
I did a degree in economics, but I did it at A level. But it's in about the first week of A level economics, I could pull out my A level economics. It's somewhere at my parents' house. But you have the different models of economies, and they basically give you state controlled, free market, and a mixed economy, which is what we live in. But the first thing they tell you about a free market economy is free market is just a model based on abstracts such as freedom of information and the assumptions that people will always act rationally. And there's never freedom of information. And there's
the problem
people
is
never
people
act
also, rationally. In addition to that, yeah, people don't act rationally. People are these pack animals that are instilled with certain. That's why then they notice that with these prisoner's dilemma games and whatever. People don't act rationally. So a person might pay more for the can of Coke because they would want to go to a Protestant shop rather than a Catholic one. That kind of thing. So it just doesn't work. That's why a lot of these economic theories just don't predict things correctly, because they assume rational behavior, which is not there. Like these recessions seem to happen because people sort of feel somehow that things are going to go bad, so they start withdrawing their money. There's no rational, you know. Yeah, silly system.
It's It is insane, but you could test this quite easily, because I'll tell you now, if you built an Apple phone and you called it Mapple instead of Apple, and it didn't have a little Apple logo on the back, just it had a big M, and it did everything that an iPhone did, but was half the price, you would still have people choose the Apple phone over the Mapple phone, just because the Apple phone was called Apple and had the little Apple logo on the back. And that is 100% true. People would do that. It's the same with designer clothes. Designer clothes exist in large part because people aren't rational. And the free market is based on the idea of rationality. And libertarians, to base their model of an entire working world system on the idea that people are inherently rational and there is an inherent movement towards absolute freedom of information, to build your entire world outlook on that means you're an idiot. Fundamentally,
I used DuckDuckGo the other day rather than Google, and I felt this sense of, hang on, I'm not doing the thing that humanity's doing. I'm not part of the tribe. I mean, I'm finding the information more easily, and if I want to find films to watch, you can find them. It's not suppressed. It's much better than Google. But I'm not. It feels weird. I'm using this thing that isn't Google. I've been used to typing google.co.uk into the search bar every day for God knows how long. And I'm DuckDuckGo. It's better, but like, this feels a bit odd. So yeah, I can see how that operates.
Indeed. Well, look, we've come to the end of the show, and it's been an amazing show. I always love having you on, Ed. You're a great speaker in real life. In fact, I've never ever heard a funnier speech in my whole life than the speech you made at the first PA conference. And as I say, when we are allowed to hold another conference, if we can get you here, we will. But please give yourself a quick outro, my friend. Tell everyone where to find you. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. I should stress that next time I come on, I do think we should just talk about the Beano. And there was some tacit agreement in that regard. The Jolly Heretic, and I live stream on Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. UK time. So you can tune in tomorrow. And I put a video up once a week, and I'm on BitChute and YouTube. And so please subscribe on BitChute, because it's, BitChute. And I've written various books, most of which are available on Amazon, or if you want to help humanity, you can buy them from other places. So there you go.
Well, thank you very much. Jason, I forgot to say,
so my latest book is Making Sense of Race, which aims to be
Ed, go to the rest. We do need to do another show then. Look, if you've got a new book out, we have the PA Book Club. If you were to send us copies of your book, we would review it on a Sunday night, and you could be the special guest, and we could talk all about you and your book.
Oh. Well, okay, I could sort that out.
We could sort it out, and we'll talk after the show. And right. You still haven't invited me on your channel, Ed. You still haven't invited me round for a virtual cup of tea.
I think I'll think about that. I just don't want to get the channel killed, though.
You know I mean? Know you don't, Ed. I'm only joking. I know I'm not allowed on your channel. I'm just ribbing you in public. It's a bit of British humour, Ed.
It's a bit of British-based humour.
It is. Bit of a jab in the ribs there.
Well, to be fair, though, I had Jared Taylor on, and I got away with that. So maybe I could get away with you.
As long as I keep my tails and my horns hidden, I'm sure I could sneak in.
Yes, thank you. It's like when they did those two documentaries on you about the British National Party. And in the first one, when they were trying to do you in, the young Nazi and proud, like they made you come across as weird. And in the second one, the secret agent, you came across as like you actually are in real life, because they weren't trying to have a go at you. So they just let you just be you.
So I came over what was slightly less weird.
You are less weird, yeah, whatever. But, you know. It was an interesting difference, anyway.
Well, look, thank you so much, Ed. Jason, give us a quick outro, mate. Tell us how to find you, then we'll give the numbers and we'll say goodnight.
Splendid conversation with Ed and you tonight. It was magnificent. KnowWhyGuilt.org, KnowWhyGuilt.org, in under 30 minutes over on YouTube, Know Why Guilt. We will be tapping in with Mr. Jared George and Eke Lux. We're going to be talking about the Frankfurt School, and we hope you all will make it over there. Thanks so much for being here, folks, and I'll pass it back to Mark Collett.
We do have a good suggestion in the chat, Ed. You could advertise an appear. People could advertise appearances for me on YouTube as Kark Mollett rather than Mark Collett, and people would know it's a typo, but it would get around the censors. Just a thought. It's a good suggestion. Okay. But look, thank you for being with us, Jason. Thank you, my friend. We've had amazing numbers tonight. D Live, we had nearly 1,600 watching, but Radio Albion's going from strength to strength. Sven's just sent me the numbers. We've had over 1,900 watching on D Live and about 50 on Entropy. So the numbers tonight have been over 3,600 watching live. Incredible numbers. And D Live is going from strength to strength. More and more Radio Albion's going from strength to strength. Every week, the Radio Albion numbers go up and up because of the quality of the stream and the audio only stream. So do check out radioalbion.com and give Sven some love. He deserves it. Well, look, thank you, everyone. It's been a great show. We are back. I'm back on Friday for one of my regular videos. I'm also back on Sunday with the lovely Laura Towler, nativist concern and Horus for PA Film Club. It is American History X. Really looking forward to that. I've been poring over that in my free time this week, and I've got some really interesting takes on that. So that is going to be very, very good. And I would also like to give an amazing or a huge shout out to a woman called Olivia Key. She has done the most beautiful nationalist song. It's up on my Telegram, so please check that out. But look, thank you, guys. It's been an amazing show. Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Jason. Thank you to everyone who donated so generously. It really means a lot. Sorry there were no lemons tonight. And thank you to everyone who's watched. It means an awful lot to me to be in this privileged position, being able to serve you guys, being able to do shows like this, and being able to work full-time for this community. I love you all. Stay safe, and we will see you same time next week for another episode of PWR. Thank you. Good night, and see you again soon, guys.